It's so nice to be back and to see everyone, and nice that we can kind of get past all of the hubbub of the holidays. As enjoyable as it is, I'm glad it only comes once a year, because there are so many things that happen over the holidays, and it's nice to sort of settle back into just the everyday, ordinary things that we do. This morning, we're going to talk about Proverbs 18:13. And I have to tell you, this is a proverb that I think Solomon wrote with me in mind. This is what Solomon said. One who gives an answer before he hears, it's foolishness and shame to him. It's very much like the statement that James made in James, the first chapter at verse 19. He said, "You know this, my beloved brothers and sisters. Now everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger." As much as I know that, like James said, as much as I know that, I still have trouble with it. And if you're like me, you probably have trouble with it too. It is a sad fact of life that we tend to say things before we listen to what's going on. I'm guilty of trying to formulate a response before I've ever let the other person make the point that they're trying to make. I guess that's the debater in me. I did that in high school. I did it in college. And you have to be quick on your feet. You have to be ready to respond. And I watched the presidential debates and the primary debates. And I sometimes get the feeling that nobody is listening to anything that anybody else says. And that's why a lot of times the discussions that we have around really important ideas are clouded, because we're just sort of talking past each other. Do you ever find yourself responding before somebody has even finished the point that they're trying to make? And I'm glad Kim is not here, because she could testify how good I am at doing that. And Mandy is not here, because she might offer some evidence as well. It's nice that I don't have to confront those people, because they know how much I do this. Anybody else have that problem? We speak before we listen. And you know, the fact of the matter is, there are a lot of things that require careful thought. And I have to say, the older I get, the more likely I am to say, I need to think about that for a little while, rather than just immediately off the top of my head have some response to what somebody says. Bumper sticker arguments are just not very complete most of the time. There's a lot of nuance that needs to go into this. And I guess that's one of the things that I learned when I started teaching in college. Students would ask me questions, and they would get a little frustrated because I said, "Well, that depends." They didn't want that kind of answer. They wanted a yes or no answer. And most of the time, yes or no answers just don't work. I've been in those situations so many times, and you just have to listen to what people have to say. Now, because we're not willing to listen, many times our response is inappropriate. And then because our response is inappropriate to the point that's being made, we resort to saying, yeah, but what you meant was this. And that's not fair. That's just an ad hominem attack. It's attacking somebody's motives. And you never want to attack somebody's motives. Hard enough for me to figure out what I think, let alone for you to figure out what I think. And it's dangerous to be a judge of other people's motivations.
It's offensive too.
It's how is it offensive?
For me to presume to know even what you're going to say next. And I found myself doing that with my wife. And it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It's been a hard thing for me to learn. Not that I've learned it yet, but I'm working on it.
I think sometimes we have to resort to this because somebody started to say something, we responded, and we missed the point. We didn't listen to what they were saying. And so when they say, yeah, but that's not what I was saying, we have to resort to, yeah, but that's what you meant. And that's so dangerous. And I think Bob is right. It's just offensive. And to have a meaningful discussion never happens when the beginning of the discussion is like that. Yeah, Margaret, you have to shout because I can't hear.
I think sometimes what we do is we're thinking about our answer instead of listening to what they're saying.
Amen. Amen. We're thinking about the answer instead of listening to what they say. I couldn't have said it better myself. Anybody else? Thoughts about, yeah, John.
I was just thinking maybe the plan today, they don't know, say, we have email and texting and say bumper sticker arguments. I mean, I have seen so many what I call battles with work and stuff. And we don't listen to each other whenever we get involved.
Yeah. Eileen.
How you say it, you emphasize certain words that upend people, or, you know, sound fine.
Yeah. One of the things that I've noticed is that the less we listen, the louder we get. We try to win an argument by shouting instead of responding to what somebody says.
Dean.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is David Craig. I agree with Margaret's response. My kids will tell you that I usually interrupt them and I talk. They'll ask me questions or they'll give me their answer, but I'm already thinking of my response. So I'm thinking ahead and I'm spewing out my response and then they're accusing me of interrupting. So Margaret's response is spot on for me.
Yeah. Yeah, you and me both. Yeah, Carol.
Sometimes when you need to communicate with somebody. There are times when you don't have to. You can just say, we can disagree about that. But you can't do that with friends and family and a coworker that you have to work with really closely. And so the option, other option is to sit down and write down what you wanted to say, because it's another way to communicate, which might get through. Because a visual person won't necessarily hear what the auditory person is, and the auditory person doesn't see what the visual person is, the picture they're trying to paint. And so when you go at it with the third way, it can come to some sense of communication.
That's true. That's true. One of the best pieces of advice I got when I started using email was my wife told me, write it out, send it to me, I'll edit it, and then send it back. And there were a lot of times that saved me from really sticking my foot in my mouth. Anybody just... Because communication is so instantaneous now, we tend to think that if you send me a message, I have to respond right away. I don't. The best thing to do sometimes is just think about what somebody said. And I agree writing it out can be effective. And I try to put that together with what Eileen said. It's the tone of voice with which we say things. You know, written communication is wonderful, but it doesn't convey sometimes the things that you see when you're face to face with somebody. Yeah, Eileen.
I'm guilty of this. I didn't know it when I started with Facebook that if you typed in all caps, you're yelling. I had no clue. I just like all caps because it's easier to read. So I sent you all caps. And every once in a while I say, I'm not yelling at you. I'm just my remote.
Yeah. I think it got used to it. Yeah. Yeah. All caps is bad. Exclamation point, those are bad too. There are just so many ways that we can, without intending to really, we can foul up the communication process. And we have to be careful. We have to understand what's going on. So, The author, Brother Himmel, suggested several reasons why he thought we tend to respond before we listen to what somebody has to say. Which of these do you think is characteristic of you? There may be all of them. They all are characteristic of me many times, but which do you think is the most important in your life? What's the thing that kind of makes you respond? He says it's pride, impatience, partiality, laziness, or just relying on feelings. Yeah, Dean.
Mine's not up there.
Oh, okay.
I fall into a lot of those categories, but mine would be past. So unfortunately, I have memory. And so my interactions with you on a daily, monthly, yearly basis, and your actions in those communications and following those communications, I will form assumptions about you. And so then when we have a conversation about something we've talked to or talked about before, I hang on to the past. And that's something that it's taken me 57 years to figure out. And if my wife was here, she could show you the text where I told her that starting last week, the past no longer exists. When you have rough childhood, when you have rough relationships, when most of the people in your life have failed you, you become a certain kind of person. And I just decided I was ruining relationships because of that. Well, because of that, I don't listen to what you have to say. I think, you know what? Dean thinks this about me. This is where he's going with it. So I'm going to say no, 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 and I'm going to interrupt you. And then I'm going to force my feelings on you. And I think that a lot of us do that. Whether it's a wife in a relationship where the husband is overbearing, or whether it's a husband in a relationship where the wife is just an incredible nag, whatever it is. Whether you're a child that doesn't feel like their voice was ever heard. We formulate all of this stuff and we carry it around like a great big suitcase through the airport full of stuff that we don't need. When really life would be a lot smoother trip if we just left it behind. So for me, that's the one that comes through the most. Now, you might read my response as impatient or relying on feelings. But it's for me, it's just past.
That's a great point. Just proof positive that deans think well.
That's up a lot. I sort of tie this to be slow to anger. The listening part is that same sort of be slow to anger. My grandfather used to tell the kids that they were going to be in trouble. Then he'd walk out and he'd get a little switch, and when he'd come in, he'd go like this. My mother says she never ever remembered that he had to use it, because he was told him ahead of time. Everybody had time to cool down before they came, and there it is. And if you're leaping without listening, sometimes you need to pray or stop and think as the wristband, say, what would Jesus do, or what would God do, or what did somebody that... We have plenty of examples in the church nowadays. What would so-and-so do, or what did Job do? And so that little bit of time, we just don't take that time to get our emotions out of that. And even if we're not listening to them, we're slowing down on our part. We're taking the log out of our eye.
Good point. Somebody had their hand up over here. Margaret.
What I say is more important than you have to say is insulting.
Yeah. Yeah. In my case, it's sometimes it's just impatience. We don't like silence. And sometimes silence is a good thing. If a conversation starts to bump up against each other, then it's not usually productive. It's the silent times that let us process what somebody has said. And in my case, it's impatience. You know, I've already been through this and I've got it figured out. Any other thoughts? Yeah, go ahead. It doesn't matter.
No, I was just going to say, like, you know, Noel and I were talking, sometimes it's easier to be angry than to have your actual emotions come out. I think sometimes we're all trying to kind of guard ourselves and not be vulnerable. You know, we've had conversations where one of us will get mad, and then later we'll look back and be like, no, I wasn't mad, I was upset, or I was hurt, or I was, you know, upset about this, confused about this. I mean, I think that sometimes being mad jumping to conclusions the way to guard yourself, the way you actually deal. But I think sometimes we are easier to make her mad than to admit that you were hurt.
Yeah. And most of the time, like Dean said, because we've had long relationships, we know how to push other people's buttons and how to make them mad. And that's never helpful. Yeah, Andrew.
I was going to say that a lot of times that, you know, being that neat about this thing, that like Felix said, we have emotions going on that our judgment and our ability to hear things properly. And that plays a big part. So like when talking with somebody, it should be, yes, there may be emotions that come up, you know, you may get frustrated, you may get mad, you may be sad, something. And I mean, it's good to let the person know, okay, this is how I'm feeling, and then take a moment there so that you guys can just get past it. But I think that also can fall under the impatience, where it's like we have all these emotions, so we want to get things done with so that I can get out of their face, they can get out of my face, so I can deal with these emotions. But maybe sometimes you both need to sit there, you know, take a break,
yeah,
and then get back to the conversation so that the emotions aren't clouding your judgment.
Yeah. That's really good advice. Sometimes you need to just step away, come back later, and have the conversation. And I have to tell you, I'm not good at that. Once the argument starts, I get like a bulldog, and I've got to stay with this argument until I win, and that doesn't serve me well. Smart enough to know that it doesn't serve me well. I'm not smart enough to know how not to do it. Dean, you have a comment?
Oh, no, I was just holding up the door.
Okay.
I think that we get to this point right here. I can tell you, and people that know me might disagree, I choose silence for peace. I really don't like conflict. I'm pretty good at it, but I don't like it. And so when you do me wrong, that upsets me, but I am not good at coming right then at that moment and saying, let me have it, or whatever it is. Or maybe I see somebody taking the wrong path in life, and I just start formulating opinions in my brain instead of just sitting them down and expressing. I don't think we're good one-on-one communicators. And part of that is our own fault. It's not being approachable. So if I'm confrontational every time that you come to me, you probably don't want to come to me. And so then you can formulate that opinion, memories, and say, you know what, I need to talk to Dean about his attitude, but this is just what's going to happen. And it just makes everything hard. So we have to be better at receiving to be received when we give. And if we fail on one of those two things, then we're going to get into this situation right here to where we're not listening to what's being said. And if I can do it without crying, my daughter and I have been fighting for 3 months. And it was over this little thing. Well, it wasn't that thing. And had I listened back when this argument started, and had I thought back when this argument started, I would have realized that what she was telling me was she felt like I loved my other daughter more. And in a rational world, she would know that's not true. But in an emotional world, with a bottom like me, she formulated that opinion. She would say mean things. I would say mean things. And so this thing just drug out and drug out.
We had this very long, heated discussion on January 1st, and it didn't go well. And on January 2nd, I spent about 2 hours on my cable saw. While I'm on my cable saw, my mind can wander. I worked on Bible lessons, I coached soccer, whatever it was. And I was pushing a board, and I should have just saved the board. But I was pushing a board through the saw when this epiphany hit me. She told me twice in that argument, if you have this problem with Emily, you would have fixed it by now. So I had to step back, stop. I'm not a texter. I'm not an emailer. I like verbal conversation. But so that my daughter could have a written record, I admitted my failings as a father. I failed as a father because I hung on to baggage. We have to let go of the baggage. We have to learn to listen to what people are saying, because we don't always, like Amelia said, we don't always have the ability to articulate what is really wrong. But if that person, if Eileen comes to me and she brings something to me, I not only have to listen to her words, I have to think about my actions prior to this conversation and try to figure out what came up with it. But if I don't have a loving relationship with Eileen, that isn't going to happen. So it's really, for me, and I have a whole sermon on how this opened up my eyes to how God sees me when I fail him. But we have to be able to step back and look at ourselves. And I don't think we're good at it. So.
That's a good point. Yeah, Bob?
That's a time, at least for myself, when an old-fashioned letter that you stick in the mail is really, really helpful, because you have to take time. It takes me a long time to write a letter that takes several tries when you're trying to put down what's in your heart.
Okay, so let's think about how we develop the art of listening. And I like Bob's suggestion. Take time to write it down. Writing it out takes more time than just blurting it out. And when we blurt it out, a lot of times it doesn't come out the right way. Anybody heard count to 10 before you respond? Yeah. Everybody shaking their head. Yes, they've heard that. How many people always do it? No. No, but it would serve us well if we would just count to 10 before we respond to somebody. Don't send an email response for at least an hour. That was Tim's advice. Maybe a day. Maybe you ought to get Kim to edit it for you. Listen to all the sides of a conversation without partiality. And don't be quick to say, you're arguing with me. Not every conversation is an argument. So don't turn it into an argument. Just listen to what somebody is saying. And Nicodemus gave the Sanhedrin some advice when they were pondering what they were going to do with the apostles. He said, even our law does not judge a man before it hears him. I don't know if you've ever been to court. I have. On a number of occasions, because policemen thought that I was going a little faster than I was supposed to. I don't do that as much now, but there was a time when I drove like my hair was on fire and went to court, and the judge said guilty. And I said, I didn't even make my case yet. He said guilty. I got really mad at that. and probably should, but nevertheless, that's the way that we tend to respond to people sometimes. We judge them guilty before we listen to what was going on. And usually we put our foot in our mouth when we do that. So any other thoughts? Yeah, Carol.
Arguments are going to be between two people are both having a bad day. It's much easier when you see that somebody is all worked up and they're saying all of these things that don't mean anything and you're having a good day. It's easy to just put it aside and not confront them because you know you're not going to get anywhere. They're not going to hear you. They're not going to see what you're trying to show them. They've got to calm down before that. But when both people are in that same situation, you just need to, if you're working on it, you need to figure out a way to do it. My uncle was domineering over his wife, and after about 50 years of marriage, being a Christian woman, she finally sat down with him, and because they loved one another, and she says, well, if you want to still live with me, she says, you're not going to talk to me like that anymore. And he agreed. And when he'd start doing that in conversation, she'd just sit there in this nice little southern voice, and she said, Tom, you know you're not allowed to talk to me like that anymore. So, you know, it's those little things that you can do to, oh, yes, I'm supposed to slow down. And you never would have thought it of him. He was so overbearing. But those simple, gentle words was all it was taking for him to go, okay, if I'm upset about something, I need to do it later or do it in a different way.
Good point. Good point. Boy, I feel like Solomon had been reading my emails sometimes when I read through the Proverbs. And his advice, I think what we can glean from the discussion this morning is this is just great advice. See, it's a spiritual book. Yes, and this is the way that God wants us to be. And it's hard for us to do that sometimes. You know, somebody said in the course of our discussion this morning, somebody said, maybe you need to stop and say a prayer. Pray for yourself, not for them. Sometimes when I pray, I ask God to make my opponent or my discussant in this situation aware of what's really happening. Now, that isn't what we're praying about. What we're praying about is to make sure that we understand. So, outstanding advice. I wish I could do it more often. And unfortunately, I don't do it as often as I should. Any other comments before we close? Yeah, Carol.
Just one thing. And when you talk about the fact that you don't catch yourself, you're not able to do it. You do it less than you used to, but you still do it. It's a matter of catching some of those little triggers. A set of a jaw that you're doing something, tone of voice, posture, and trying to pay attention to something that you're doing to keep yourself from doing something that you know that you don't want to do anymore. Because that other person was made by God and their spirit is important to him. So I need to pull back on mine, and the law hinges on love. Everything It's supposed to be with love.
Once again, I'm going to change my slide. So recognize your own triggers. I think that's a really good point. Any other comments?
I think the last thing that I would say, Dean, is in all situations, avoid assumptions. So when we're talking about arguing, I need to avoid the assumption that I know what you think. But I think that we have to take it, I think there's always two sides of that. I think that we have to avoid the assumption that you know how much I appreciate you. So we oftentimes are in these comfortable, lazy relationships with people, whether it's our brothers and sisters or our children, our spouses, our coworkers. We assume that they know that we appreciate them, that we love them, that we are impressed with the things that they do right. And if we learn to have more conversations with people on the positive, then when I have to sit you down in my office and explain to you the negative, we've built a relationship. And if I don't assume that you know that I appreciate you, then how can I expect you not to assume that I don't appreciate you? So if we walk into our disagreement already at the disagreement.
Excellent. Excellent point. Yeah, Andrew, you got the last comment.
The information code is that you're paying a lot of things going on right now, but we're going to have conversations. I mean, I see it in my job when I talk to my higher ups. They sometimes be able to even have a conversation. Oh, I have a million other things I'm doing. It's like, well, you know, you can set those aside. We have this conversation, write that down, and then go back to what you're doing. But at least if you write it down, show that you're listening, then we can come back to it later. Because I know at times I have things running through my head, and you set them aside when I have a conversation so that I can hear them clearly and understand.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, Andrew works with kids with special needs. And I spent some time doing that. One of the things that I learned when I started working with those kids is that sometimes you just need to ask them, are you really tired? Would you like to take a nap? And sometimes that's what it takes. So, outstanding point.